Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge, Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Don't miss Kohl's 3-day sale this Friday through Sunday. Buy more, save more. Take an extra 15% off. Spend $100 or more and take an extra 20% off. Go to Kohl's.com to download your savings pass. Then, use it on top of already great savings. Like 40 to 50% off young men's and boys' Star Wars apparel. And 10 to 40% off all NFL team apparel and home. This weekend, at Kohl's. Select styles, some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I am, of course, Angela Butler. Today's guest is NAACP President Ms. Dot Scott. She's the president of the Charleston, South Carolina NAACP, and she's going to talk about race here in America, among other things, being black in America, and also about the 9 people who were killed. How are you, President Scott?
I'm doing well. Yes,
ma'am. That is good. That is great. I'm sorry that I had to meet you this way. I wish it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, well, what do we say? Life happens. It was tragic, but we have to really feel like it's going to make a difference, and hopefully we're right in that.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, I understand that. So one of my first questions will be, what was the reaction in the Charleston community when the news spread about the murder of the 9 black people?
Well, when we got the message, I know when I got the message, I got a call from another activist because I got it about 10:30 that night. It happened, I guess, more like between the 8 and 9. 15 hour that it did happen, and it was just one of those things that you just cannot even fathom that it happened. And because we've been talking so much about black-on-black crimes, the first thing came to mind, I said, I'm just hoping that it's not some person going in and doing something like trying to rob whomever that was there. Never in my mind that I think a church would experience something like a hate crime that was perpetrated among those folks having Bible study. And so I think I have to look back in retrospect and say that the community handled it better than I would have thought they would, given the enormity of that level of devastation and the amount of families that were involved. So for that, we're grateful for. We didn't need to lose any more lives, have the community torn up, and the fact that the perpetrator was pretty much in 48 hours, they had apprehended the perpetrator. So I think that helped everything as well.
Okay. All right, I understand that. So the Confederate flag is one of my questions. The Confederate flag is still flown. How do you feel about the flag? And do you believe that it will be taken down? It's a two-part question, President Scott. Do you believe that removing the Confederate flag will change anything?
Well, first, let me be clear. I think when I say we, I'm talking about the NAACP, not just on the local level in Charleston, South Carolina, where I'm the president. Our state conference in the state of South Carolina, NAACP, has had an ongoing campaign to get that flag removed. Yes, I believe that the flag is good. The removal is going to make a difference because I often say that symbol matters. We have folks that seem to think, oh, it's just a flag. I say that's like telling a Christian the cross is just a cross. It is a symbol and it means something. And when what a mean-spirited thing, and it's placed in a place that reminds a certain segment of the community that this denotes that at some point the states, the Confederate states, decide we're going to secede from the country simply because, from the United States, simply because you are disallowing us to have our slaves. And so it was a constant reminder. That flag is a constant reminder. I have to believe that the death of this many people and what I call carefully selected people, I think that it's by divine that these people were there, that it's going to make a difference. It has already begun to make a difference. And there's nothing so permanent that we can actually say it can't be changed. So one thing about Black folks, we've learned to believe in things. When we talk about faith, things not seen, things hoped for, we believe in those things. And I'm hoping and feel relatively optimistic that that flag is going to come down.
Okay, that is wonderful. That is very good news for the United States, not just Charleston, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. You just have to remember that Charleston, because Charleston was the first state to fire and succeed, they were the first signers. We were, you know, when we say South Carolina, we tend to have the notorious reputation of being first in all of the bad stuff. We were the first one to succeed. So I think that it had to take something this, what I call, devastating. We had to have what I call a massacre of people of goodwill. And in order to prove that they were goodwill, at least send a message, I think it had to be in a church. And then to get our legislators and elected officials involved, we had to have someone on that status that's been out here long enough to know that the conversation is being had, it has been had, but the real discussion around race, the candid discussion around race, it's one of the hardest things for perpetrators to admit wrong. And our newly elected president for the College of Charleston has been one of the most staunch supporter of the Confederate flag. So here we now see that he has called for the flag to come down. And I've always said that when Glenn McConnell decides that the flag will come down, it will come down. And so on Saturday, he came out with, in fact, he came out on Thursday evening prior to the funeral on Friday for Senator Pinckney.
Yes, ma'am. Senator Pinckney was a senator, a prominent, intelligent Black man. So I'm praying that and all the 8 that were murdered or massacred, I'm praying that it will make a difference here in the entire United States of America, including where I live at, Florida.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it will. I mean, particularly, I said
I don't believe they died in vain. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't believe that either. And when I had an opportunity to speak at church on yesterday, and I was telling them, when we wanted to get the makeup of who would have been there at the time when this tragedy happened, if you look at the makeup of the people there, we had an almost 80-year-old woman that was there. We
Yes,
had
ma'am.
Professional young Black women, Middle East Black women. We had a young boy that, had he been a young man that had been on the street, he could have easily been a victim of racial profile. And then we had the minister there with his flock. So I think that this divine plan was to make sure we got all the ingredients there to make happen
yes.
what needs to happen. And one of the things I think has begun to come out of this is those people who are people of goodwill that pretty much have been quiet, they're more likely now to speak up. They're more likely now to say, you know what, we can no longer be quiet, because the worst thing that happens is the silence of good people. And I think that's what's going to make the tide. It's never been just about Black people making the changes for ourselves. It's been the combination of the will of the Black people to keep keep up the fight and the support of people of goodwill that's not necessarily of African-American. So as I often tell people, the NAACP didn't start with all black folks. In fact, the majority of the people that organized to stop the lynchings that were going on, they were Jewish. So I believe that the outpouring, just the decency of people to see what happened and the reason it happened, it's just, it probably reaches really touch to the soul of folks. And I've always said it, you have to change hearts and minds. It's not just policies. Hearts and minds need to change, because you can put policies in place, people will find a way to get around it. But when you change hearts and minds, that's when we really can get some changes.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Because just like my grandmother and granddaddy told me, you can put in place all the laws you want to prevent discrimination, hatred, even murder, but to protect those who are being did that way or possibly could be did that way. But if the heart of people don't change, no law or policy can make a difference.
At least not going to eradicate it. You may make, you know, folks who are afraid of what consequence might be in place if you don't follow the law. And most folks, if they get enough money to buy themselves out of any predicament, then it's worth it. They weigh what is the penalty versus me committing the crime. And when we have police officers that were able to get away with saying, you know, I feared for my life, that's when you begin to see folks doing things, and you see an uptick in folks, officers are being sent these messages. Sometimes it's not even subtle, that says, you know what, if this happened, this is how we'll handle this. This is what we'll do. We'll take your gun and we'll put you on the ministry, but we'll give the solicitor, whomever, time to look at it, and I can assure you they'll come back and say it was justified. So, you know, those things have to change. And the folks that are responsible for the office have to make sure that they are hiring folks. And usually you see these signs far way before you have the extent of what this kid has done. Obviously, there were signs. There were his discussion about friends. It's been pretty much obvious where his mind was.
You're speaking of Dylan Roof?
Yeah, Roof, yeah. I mean, I thought the blood of these nine people are on the hands of a lot of folks. Folks who endorse, keeping the flag up, and folks who are, we have to understand that the people who supervise minorities could very well be the same people who think of them as less than. And as long as that's perpetuated, and when you continue to move towards segregating schools again, you're sending that message that those others are not as good as you are. And so we continue to have that kind of message being sent. We have not, I mean, in recent years until the election of the black president, most of this thing had been kept quiet. It wasn't that it wasn't there, because my mom says, you know, if it's in there, it's going to come out, and sooner or later something's going to happen. And this is what happened. So now bring it to the forefront that folks can now see exactly what is, you know, what a lot of the folks' true feelings are. So that's what we're dealing with now.
Yes, ma'am, I understand that. Being the president of the Charleston, South Carolina NAACP, where the murders happened at, my next question would have to be, do you believe that systematic, consistent discrimination in this country will change here in the United States of America?
Yeah, well, I think some of it has changed to some degree. But I think that what has happened, those that have been quiet, as I said, about not overtly expressing those feelings or carrying out those actions, they have somehow been so annoyed, agitated, aggravated by the election of a minority, a black president, that those things have surfaced. Now, because this happened here in South Carolina, the difference in this, it happened all at once rather than in the aggregate. Because when you looked at the Ferguson and all of the other recent deaths that we got high-profile coverage, it's not hard to get up to the number 9. We just had it all done at one time. So it's of the world on us. I do believe that a great start is with the flags removal, because here again, we're talking about the hearts and minds. Those hearts of those folks that thought, let's leave it up regardless of what people think, we don't care. Now we begin to care. And I often say we as African Americans, we pay a high price. It's about time that we stop having to pay for life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Why are we still paying? But we're paying with blood, sweat, tears, as we did in 100 years gone by. So hopefully not only will become more engaged in what's going on and not be apathetic about it, be willing to challenge things like your school board. Be willing to challenge why friends and neighbors don't vote. Because if we continue to be that laid back or don't care and hoping somebody else is going to do it, I often say people say, oh, just leave it in the hands of the Lord. Well, we are the hands of the Lord. And if we're going to affect change, we have to get more of us to be engaged.
It never ceases
to amaze me.
You're right, ma'am. You are perfectly right. Dylan Roof murdered 9 people. One, which was a sinner's name, Senator Pinckney. I hope I pronounced his name right. No disrespect intended.
Yeah.
And 8 other people. At the end of the show, I'm going to call their names out before the show ends. But what I'd like to know, as president of the NAACP. Do you feel that what he did is domestic terrorism?
The question was, what he did was what?
Do you feel or believe that what Dylan Roof did, murdering the 9 black people, do you believe that is domestic terrorism here in the United States of America? The reason I ask this, because most people know that murders and killings have been to black men and women have been going on ever since slavery, but the media has bought it out. It's also social websites, the internet, and all those things. So I'm just asking, do you feel that what he did is domestic terrorism here in the United States?
Well, you know, I think all of the killing is domestic. When you look at Sandy Hook and this guy goes in and all these people weren't even black. You know, we didn't use the term domestic terrorism then, but 27 folks' babies lost their lives in a kindergarten. So if we are saying, are we terrorizing the schools? Are we terrorizing the sanctuary? Are we terrorizing black people? I think if we want to name it that, I have no problem with that, because I think it's just terror to even think that you can't go to church and be safe, or you can't leave your children at a daycare and feel safe for them. So I don't have a problem with the wording, you know, the wording of that. Any way you cut it, it's just an awful, awful sense of insecurity to know that people who have no kind of connection with you in terms of knowing you personally would not even think twice about killing, I mean, a whole group of people. It's unfortunate that we don't talk about. I always tell people the profile of our mass killers are young white males. When you keep telling them these, I don't know how and what goes through the mind of young males, white male, that will kill folks they don't know and kill them in groups. Black men, these young black boys, and while there's no excuse for them because people kill folks that they associate with, they kill individual people for what they think is a valid reason. I don't care if it's a $10 bag of drug or whatever it is. But then when you have the mass killing, like killings like this, you're trying to figure out what's in the mindset of somebody. I just want to exterminate a whole group of people. Now, surely some of these people have some issues, mental issues. This Dylan, to say that Dylan Roof is mental, to me, would be tantamount to insulting mental people. I think he was methodical. He did his investigation. This was planned and carried out to the degree he wanted to happen. So I don't think labeling him as mental, having mental issue, would be fair to people who are truly dealing with mental illness. So to your question, I don't have a problem with the term. And I usually don't use the term domestic terrorism, because terrorism, anything you can get folks afraid to do because they believe some harm is going to come to them. When you take away their freedom to move about freely and feel comfortable, you terrorize them, you know. And domestic is, you know, if it happens here, it does. And in the United States, we are worse. We're just awful about the amount of people we incarcerate. We're awful about the amount of people we kill. And these are not because you're fighting a war against somebody else. It's like a war within itself.
Yes, 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 it is. Yes, it is. The criminal justice system is horrible. Yes, ma'am. So the reason I believe, do you believe that the reason when people are released from prison, because not trying to be unfair or racist, but most of the people who are in prison are black, great majority of them. They're not the only ones there, but a great majority are black men and women.
We're overwhelmingly first arrested. And oftentimes we're arrested for petty stuff. And here's where the cycle begins. When you arrest people for petty stuff and you put them in jail, then when they come out, they're not able to find any employment, because it's like you can get people who murdered somebody if you're not of color and come back and still find a way to get work and be able to have a livable wage. It's harder for minorities before you even go in jail. But then when that process starts, that you've gone to jail for disorderly conduct or resisting arrest because you were profiled, and then you try to get a job and you can't. So then they get involved in, how do I make a living? You know, it's no different than the mafia before. I mean, when the Italians were doing the same thing these African-American men are doing, it's called something else, you know. This is like black on black crime. Nobody ever said Italian on Italian crime. So our justice system, we've got in a state like South Carolina, you have judges that have so many built-in biases. You have teachers that have built-in biases. When I was in undergrad school, I had a professor that was highly insulted because I stated that I thought Dr. King was a tremendous orator. These are the kind of biases that are built in, and our children have to deal with it. Our young men have to deal with the court system. So when you go before a judge, when young non-African-American children get involved in the justice system, all kind of pretrial intervention happens. Sometimes it's never on the record. So we've got a real problem. I'm grateful for having had thus far a black president that have been able to get reelected, so he can now deal with some of the stuff that are specific to African Americans. Having Loretta Lynch in there as our attorney general means much. And when we can get the Supreme Court to make decisions that they made in this last week, tells you hearts and minds are changing.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Greater is, you know, we've always believed in a greater being, and if we continue to do that, but in the meantime, be the hands of the Lord and do the work. And I think that we can also help to affect changes and help to change some minds.
Okay. All right, President Dot Scott is who you're listening to, everyone. She is the president of the NAACP in Charleston, South Carolina. She's agreed to come on the show, and I'm more than glad to do the show. President Scott, my next question would have to be, do you believe that the black people will ever be paid reparations? That's one question, okay? okay. Do you think that black people are fighting to keep the rights that they already have instead of gaining more rights and equality in this country called the United States of America?
Well, first, I haven't dealt. I've had the issue of reparation brought up many times. It's something that I haven't given a lot of thought to. I don't know, maybe because I think it won't happen. I'm not saying that it won't. I haven't given that much thought. It sure would be a wonderful thing. We never got the horse and the mule, the 40-acre and the horse and the mule, so maybe we'll get there. Now, in terms of fighting battles that's already been fought, I made a statement here in the last couple of days. I am about tired of singing We Shall Overcome. I don't want to cross the arm anymore. I don't want to sing it anymore. So, and don't ask me to sway anymore with it. I want to make sure that we indeed stop having to refight battles. When we win, I want that to be a done deal. Now, how do we make that happen? First, we can't get complacent. The gains that were made on the sweat and the blood of our ancestors, for the most part, we sat there and we kept withdrawing. Like I said, it's like having a bank that they deposited all these good and these rights and everything, and they earned it for us through their blood, sweat, and tears. We sat here and we kept pulling it back. We kept using it, but we're not putting anything back in it. That's our own, what I call, a problem. So until we realize that nothing is you can use and use and don't think you will deplete it, because it's like buying a house. If you don't maintain it or you don't pay it, you can lose it. We shouldn't have to lose it, nobody else, but nobody else had to fight. And so if we get it, we cannot be remiss and find every reason when it comes to election time, whether it's municipal, whether it's midterm or what, and not go out and vote and wonder why we have the same judges and why we have the same solicitor and why we have the same mayor and the sales to make sure we elect people that have our best interests at heart as well. And I'm not saying just elect black people, because sometimes that can be our worst enemy. What we need is people like those folks that were there that helped the NAACP get started, people of goodwill. If we elect people that have our best interests at heart, but first we have to be a part of the system. But we tend to wait and complain. It's like writing a check and getting all upset because the check bounced. Well, you don't have anything in there. When the last you put anything in? When the last you went to a school board meeting? Did you get anybody to register?
And
that's where it comes home to us. My mom passed in February of this year. And my mom voted every year, and she was 88 when she passed, every year. My daughter at 18 registered immediately on her birthday and vote every time in every election. We have to be about the business of looking out for ourselves and our children and not just sit back and depend on other people. Because if we don't respect ourselves enough, how dare we sit back and be surprised that folks are thinking, you know, they don't care. You know, we got young women letting these children come to their house, selling drugs from their door, living in it, hadn't finished school. If your child has not finished school and it doesn't go to work and always has got some money, don't you think somebody needs to be asking a hard question? Because you're either going to find them in jail or you're going to find them at the cemetery sooner or later. So we have to get real with ourselves before we get what I call righteously indignant about what other people are doing or not doing. We have to take care of our business. Leave your door open. Don't get surprised who walks in.
Yes, you are right. So Walter Scott was shot in the back by policeman Michael Slager, also, I believe, in Charleston, South Carolina.
He's in North Charleston, but it's we're neighboring cities, because I live in North Charleston and I govern in Charleston. So Michael Slager got shot probably less than 3 miles from where I live.
Okay, yes, ma'am. What do you believe will slow down the killing by policemen?
Well, these things we do. We just got the body cam legislation put in place when officers can no longer lie and get away with it. Because, as I said earlier, when there's no consequence, when you know it's just your word against somebody else, and every department wants their department to look good. It doesn't matter how many people they kill, how unfair they are. Long as we can get certified and we're looking good, it doesn't matter. It's like the Black Lives really doesn't matter. So here what we're saying is, at once we put in place things, and Michael's death served as a means to get those bodies, because if some bystander citizen hadn't taken care and exposed it, it would be business as usual, where we would have the police department saying something else, because the officer had already began to use the cover-up tactics by moving the taser and putting it by Scott, but he didn't know he was on video. So what we do is we force him to wear those body cameras, and it's been proven. It's like a 69% reduction in shootings by police officer when they are forced to wear body cameras. So those are the things that make a difference.
So body cameras is what you believe President Scott is helping slow down the killings by policing, because you just said.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Okay.
I really do. It has helped in other states. We just got it after Scott's slaying. So, you know, the data's not in yet. But, you know, hell, recently we hadn't had any policemen shooting and killing anybody since they got the body cam. So let's see how this goes. But in other areas where they've been wearing it and they've got enough data to look at, it is proven. And most times, folks, when people know they're being videotaped, we act differently. We behave differently. So this should be no different.
Yes, ma'am, you're right. Now, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Miss Rosa Parks and many people who are really might be nameless or faceless fought for the rights of all people, especially Black American people, by boycotting. One of the things they did was boycott the bus system. Now, I had a gentleman on my show a while back, President Scott, and his name is Curtis Robinson. And he suggested, he said, do you feel that, as he does, that would a boycott here in America change anything in your opinion? Let me finish, please, ma'am.
Yeah.
Let me finish, please, ma'am. I mean, not spending money here in the United States of America, because I did my research, and it says Black Americans have a lot of spending power here in the United States. I believe it's almost $1 trillion a year.
Okay, let me answer your question, though, because I don't want my phone to die out and we can't continue. All right.
Yes, ma'am.
We spend a lot of money. If you could just about close some of these banks down, if we get the churches not to deposit their money in certain banks on Monday morning, we can. Will they do it? Probably not. I just traveled to London about 3 weeks ago, when our money is worth less over there than it does here. It sounds good, but how do we do that? When we don't spend the money here, how do we who live here boycott buying anything here, and then our money is worth less when we try to spend it someplace else?
Okay. All right. I understand.
And I agree with you.
I
agree with you that we've got, when it talks about the Black dollars, we've got a lot of spending power as well. But when we say we're going to boycott where we live, I'm not sure. It's a novel idea, but how do you do it? Well, everything that I got bought in London, I had to pay 33% more for it than I would have, than what the dollar was worth here.
Okay, I understand that. All right. Do you believe that the reason Black people who have been incarcerated or in prison are not allowed to have all their rights restored, because you have to be able to vote to be selected for jury duty.
Well, I think that has, in fact, that could easily be something that if you are punished, you can come back and you can get your driver's license, you can do everything else. We don't want you to vote. The reason for that, when your prison system is 75% of your prison system are the people who will probably vote on the other side of the aisle, as we might say, then let's just lock them up, and then what we do, we take the rights away. The mere fact that we have in all of these voter ID laws speaks volumes to why that premise is so true. We don't want you to vote. It's not that we don't want you to violate the voting law. We don't want you to vote twice. I always say it's hard enough to get us to go and vote one time more than try to vote twice. The people who are able to do that kind of maybe violation of voting is the folks who have multiple homes, different places. Black folks are not doing that. So there's never been documented facts to show that in any measurable amount that there have been voter fraud among minorities. So, no, we have to find whether we have to redraw the district line or whether we have to make it so cumbersome. Do we close down the precinct where you vote? Do we not let you vote on Sunday? Bring the souls to polls? Anything to stop you from voting. So, it absolutely.
Yes, okay. All right, because I believe that, too. I believe that not letting people who have been to prison, who have felonies, who have paid their debt to society, have did their time, should have all their rights restored.
And most people don't know it. Once you have paid your debt and you're off probation, once that's done, your rights to vote is restored. Most of them, we try to educate. See, sometimes folks just don't know it, but that's part of educating our people. I said I can't advocate for them until you educate them, because people, when you try and advocate for them and they don't even know what you're advocating for, it doesn't do any good. But once they have served their time and no longer on probation, they can get their rights restored.
Yes. It's a long, drawn-out process, though.
Nope.
You get what I'm saying?
No. The process after you've paid, after you've done your probation, it's like going back to this. And nobody has to expunge any record or do anything. It's a given. You have paid your, and this is something I was on the board with the League of Women Voters for a good while, and that's their baby. They live in issues of around voting. Once you have time and you're no longer on probation, you can get your rights to vote, and it's not a cumbersome process. We work with that.
Okay.
With the voter project, we worked for that 5 years ago that we did, but that's just what it is. Sometimes people think things are harder to do than it is, and they've never even tried.
Okay, so you're saying that black people who have, or anyone who's been to prison in the United States of America, can get their rights restored to vote.
Once you are no longer on probation. Once you've paid your debt to society and is no longer on probation. Now, it doesn't mean I come out of jail and I still got 3 years of probation. You have to be out of the probation period to make sure you're not going to whatever, that you can vote. And it's a process of just going to register again.
Okay. All right. Thank you for correcting me on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just have one more question. It's about voting. You were talking about all the different laws they're passing about voting. Not laws, but things they're trying to get passed to hinder people from voting. Is it because they don't want certain people in office? You start talking about redistricting and things like that. Where I live at here in Florida, there's one county where I live at, and then you go into another county, then you go back into the county that I live in.
We call that gerrymandering when they just cut. You know, in other words, if they want to give them a minority district, they'll do everything to cut them into that little area. And then when you look at it on a map, it looks like somebody just drew a snake in, came back out, and picked up that group. And what they're doing, it's called gerrymandering to make sure that you have a strong district where the people who can vote in a certain district will be voting for certain candidates. So if they know it's a district that they want to be majority Democrat or Republican, they cut it as such. And since most of your southern states, those folks that are in charge of making those decisions, they put in those kind of drawing maps to make sure their district is safe. Now, the Voting Rights Act, where we lost, a strong piece of enforcement when the Supreme Court voted that these districts no longer had to go through the courts to get okay to redraw these lines. See, before they could even change voting places, you had to get an okay from the Justice Department. We lost that. And that's the reason why we still have to get as many people to the poll, regardless, because they tried as hard as they could beyond in 2008 and again in 2012 to make sure that we weren't going to be able to elect Barack Obama, overwhelmingly they would be Democratic voters. So even with that, if enough people come out and vote, we still have a chance to get some representation that's going to be favorable for folks who are what I call of the liberal status.
Okay, so you're saying gerrymandering. President Scott, when I said that I live in one county, and when I leave the county that I'm in, and the town I'm in, I go into a neighboring county. Then I go back. We that live and go back into our county. That's called gerrymandering?
No. I don't know. When you say you go, if you're telling me that when you look at a map of where people can vote and who votes in the same precinct, and you look at a map and it looks like it's drawn all, wonder why they went all there and bring that many people out and then they go around. Gerrymandering is, in other words, it comes from the term gerry-rigging something, just something that doesn't look normal, but they do it because the purpose is to make sure you get districts set up the way they want it to be to secure that when the folks who can vote, who can vote, not necessarily who will come out and vote, but everybody who can vote in this area, the majority will be overwhelming the outcome that they want to get. So that's what the gerrymandering says, to go in and out of a county, unless it's a district drawn line. I'm not sure, because I'm close to two counties, Charleston, Dorchester, and Berkeley County. They are all within 3 miles of me where I live. So we got surrounding county, but usually what I'm referring to is the lines that have been drawn to ensure getting the results when folks go out to vote.
Okay, all right, then. Thank you for answering that question. Thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler, and thank you for correcting me.
You're most welcome,
President Scott. My prayers are with you and with myself too, and my own family and county and town I live in. Like I said earlier, I'm sorry that I had to meet you and interview you on, something like this happening, the massacre there in Charleston, South Carolina. But you said something not on the air, but you told me that you have to believe. I believe if I'm quoting you right, something good could come out of this, something beneficial.
I believe that. And I believe every day that has passed. You know, when I had an opportunity to attend Senator Pinckney's funeral, just listening to the hopes and the prayers and what seems to be genuine concern of folks that don't even look like us and those who perished, that we can make a difference, because I really believe greater is he that's in us of goodwill than is in the people of the world. So I really believe I've been doing this job 15 years with the NAACP, and because I believe that in spite of whatever life hands us as a people, while
yes, ma'am,
something singing, we shall overcome, I do believe that these are the kind of stuff that strengthens us these are the.
I cannot hear you, President Scott.
Yeah, what I would say, I believe these are the kinds of stuff, these kind of atrocities, and it strengthens us, and it sometimes it invigorates people. It's almost like being given an injection that says you need to do something. And if this is not one of those you need to do something moment, I don't know what is. So I firmly believe that this is making a difference already.
Yes, ma'am. I believe that too. I have that hope and belief and faith too.
Yes.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to say, President?
No, I thank you for the opportunity. Like you said, it's unfortunate that we had to meet under these circumstances, at least in conversation. But it takes this kind of stuff to get messages out. If we are able to spread out any news that anybody can use, like I said, news we can use, then this time is not wasted. This is good time spent. So I am honored to have been able to speak with you. I wish you Godspeed in what you do, getting the message out. We can never educate our people enough.
Thank you, and I thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. It's also been an honor for me to talk to you, President Scott.
Okay, well, be in touch, okay?
Yes, ma'am. I will, and thank you again.
All right. Thank you. You have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
You too, President Scott. God bless you too. Okay. All right, everyone. You've been listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. The guest was President of the Charleston, South Carolina NAACP, Ms. Dot Scott. As you heard, she has been president of the NAACP for 15 years. As we all know, there were killings at the church of the Historical Emmanuel AME Church in South Carolina. 9 people were killed, murdered, massacred, however you want to put it, in the church while they were in prayer in the church. I'm going to call the names out, and then I'm going to end the show. And if I mispronounce anyone's name, please forgive me. The first name is Senator Pinckney. He was a senator in South Carolina. The second person was D. Payne Middleton. The other one was Miss Ethel Lance. And I meant to say Mr. D. Payne Middleton, excuse me. Also, Miss Susie Jackson. Miss Cynthia Hurd. Tywanza Sanders, Reverend Shawmata Coleman, and if I pronounced that wrong, I apologize and do the best I can, and of course, Miss Myra Thompson, and Reverend Daniel Simmons Sr. Those are the people that were massacred in the historical Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. And I just want to say their names because I believe that none of them died in vain, just as President Scott does. I believe there's something great and good that will come out of their death. And that's what I have to believe. I have to believe that evil didn't win. So I thank you all for coming on show. I thank Ms. Scott for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I think she may have hung the phone up. But, again, I thank you, and thank you again for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. And have a great weekend, and I'll see you again next week.
Next time you need auto parts and accessories, trust the parts professionals at the 42 Birmingham area O'Reilly Auto Parts stores. Our professional parts people know what it takes to get the job done right. Professionals have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for decades. Now you can too. Professional parts people. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts. Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Way early this morning, Brad Higdon shared a major spoiler alert from everyone's favorite hit show, sad emojis to express his feelings about the plot twist, and a playlist he made to drown out his sorrows? Dude, oversharing alert. Brad, Geico has something worth sharing with those who haven't defriended you. Like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance at geico.com. So stop moping about the post-apocalyptic world and start saving in the real world. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.